Hello and welcome to Spoilers, this first introduction to the play The Tragedy of Marion by Elizabeth Carey. In the following episodes, there will be introductory notes, followed by a plain text recording of the dialogue, a plain text being the first cut edit of our full cast audio recording. It has all the text, but no SFX, no Foley, and it's the edit we use to hunt out textual errors, retakes, or cuts. So it's not perfect, and we may change the take for the final thing. If you want to just enjoy our production in the future as a thing in itself, stop listening now and wait for the release. Or if you're listening in the future, look for the full cast episode further up the podcast list. But if you're still listening, let's enter spoiler land. Spoiler land! So, Act 3. Let's recap the structure of the play so far. A long interlocking Act 1, a single scene destabilised by entrances and exits, whereas Act 2 was a series of short semi-duologues, I'm counting the Sons of Babas as technically the same person, culminating in an exciting fight at the end of Act 2. The play has a really nice shape. From a distance, it has harmony. And Act 3 is similarly tidy. There are effectively two scenes in Act 3, and it should be noted that in the text, the number of scenes listed follows primary entrance and exit cues, so that Act 1 in the text is broken down into a lot of scenes, but they're not individualised separate acts that an audience would recognise as a different scene, per se. The location doesn't fundamentally change. Anyway, two neat little scenes in Act 3, which deliver the pivot of the action. They're basically two units of plotting, two handers where the primary drivers of the action, Salome and Mariam, make decisions about what to do in Acts 4 and 5. Decisions are made, the die is cast. So, scene 1. Pheroras returns and has a chat with his sister Salome. The first of three scenes where various siblings work on each other. We arrive here mid-scene. Salome has been trying to stop Pheroras from marrying the plot device. The underused Grafina. Structurally, you only met her so that this conversation has some meaningful weight at this point in the play. Otherwise the audience will be going, who? So the audience does know who they're talking about because we met Grafina earlier. In a film version, she'd probably be shown in a flashback montage with pretty much no dialogue at all, so be glad we got a speech. Anyway, we enter the dialogue as Pheroras has had enough of Salome's urging. Urge me no more, Grafina, to forsake not 12 hours since I married her for love. Some interesting questions of timing here. The action of the play broadly happens in one day, but I thought that in the earlier scene with Pheroras and Grafina they were about to marry. I may have misunderstood that, which would make this scene sometime effectively in the evening, 12 hours or so later. So time will have to speed up in terms of action pretty swiftly if we're going to complete all this in one day. But maybe I'm being dogmatic here, maybe I'm being over-literal, maybe I've made a mistake. Pheroras isn't interested with Salome's suggestion to leave his wife. Just because you're my sister doesn't mean I'm going to listen to you. And do you think a sister's power can make a resolute decree so soon remove?
Poor minds they are that honour not affects.
Who hunts for honour, happiness neglects.
You might have been both of felicity and honour too in equal measure seized.
It is not you can tell so well as I what 'tis can make me happy or displeased.
To match for neither beauty nor respects, one mean of birth, but yet of meaner mind, a woman full of natural defects. I wonder what your eye in her could find.
Mine eye? I do love this dialogue. It's proper sibling needling at each other kind stuff. Oh, says Salome, I don't know what you see in her. Pheroras tries to explain why he finds her lovely, but Salome is having none of it.
Mother. But say you thought her fair, as none thinks else. Knows not Pheroras, beauty is a blast. Much like this flower, which today excels, but longer than a day it will not last.
Her wit exceeds her beauty.
Wit may show the way to ill as well as good, you know.
But wisdom is the porter of her head, and bars all wicked words from issuing thence.
But of a porter better were you sped if she against their entrance made defence.
It's great stuff, and it's important setup for the end of the scene. But now we are interrupted by the entrance of an exposition monkey. The High Priest Ananel enters at almost exactly halfway through the play to deliver news.
My lips, my son, with peaceful tidings blessed, shall utter honey to your listening ear. A word of death comes not from priestly breast. I speak of life. In life there is no fear.
Ananel being the High Priest twice, remember, he was replaced by Mariam's brother briefly, before Mariam's brother was somewhat killed, and then Ananel became top dog again. Anyway, he's hinted at news of life. Ooh, could it be? Could it?
And for the news I did the heavens salute, and filled the temple with my thankful voice. For though that morning may not me pollute, at pleasing accidents I may rejoice.
Spit it out, man. Life, thanks, pleasing accidents for an exposition monkey. He doesn't half make a meal of things. It falls to Thororus and Salome to fill in the gaps.
Herod's alive!
Their reactions are quite different to one another.
Is Herod then revived from certain death?
What? Can your news restore my brother's breath?
Both so... And so the king is safe and sound, and did such grace in royal Caesar meet, that he, with larger style than ever crowned, within this hour Jerusalem will greet.
He'll be here within the hour. So assuming that Act 1 started quite early in the day, 6, 7am, Act 2 around 7, 8am, so it must be now 7, 8pm, and Herod will be here by 8, 9ish. Shall we say 8 for 8.30? Anyway, this means that there's quite a lot to do.
I did but come to tell you, and must back, to make preparatives for sacrifice. I knew his death your hearts, like mine, did rack, though to conceal it proved you wise.
Oh, and that's one hell of a closing line. I really like that line. I may be making more of this, but it's just a, oh, I know you were all sad at the possible death of Herod, but you didn't show it, did you? Little bit of shade there. Little bit of wry shade. It's a mini bit of power play. Or I'm overthinking it. I mean, it's not like Ananel says anything else in the play, so we have to mine what we can find. That was it. No more. Lovely writing, even for a walk-on part. And Salome is delighted because she can spring her trap on Constabarus, and Pheroras is scared because he's now in deep doo-doo with Herod for marrying Grafina without his approval.
How can my joy sufficiently appear?
A heavier tale did never pierce mine ear.
Now Salome of happiness may boast.
But now Pheroras is in danger most.
I shall enjoy the comfort of my life.
And I shall lose it. Losing of my wife.
Joy, heart, for Constabarus shall be slain.
Grieve, soul, Grafina shall from me be ta'en.
Smile, cheeks, the fair Silius shall be mine.
Weep, eyes, for I must with a child combine.
Yep, that comes across more explicitly to today's ears. But this is a neat bit of call and response. Yes, it's very formal and versy, but I find these kind of tricks to actually work, however artificial they might sound to our modern ears. That done, Salome is all business. She has all the materials to hand to spring her trap. But can she get her brother on side by giving him something in return for help? I can get Herod off your back, brother. Just do this little thing for me.
Well, brother, cease your moans. On one condition, I'll undertake to win the king's consent. Grafina still shall be in your tuition, and her with you be ne'er the less content.
What's the condition? Let me quickly know, that I as quickly your command may act. Were it to see what herbs in Ophir grow, or that the lofty Tyrus might be sacked.
'Tis not so hard a task. It is no more, but tell the king that Constabarus hid the sons of Babas, done to death before. And 'tis no more than Constabarus did. And tell him more that we, for Herod's sake, not able to endure our brother's foe, did with a bill our separation make, though loath from Constabarus else to go.
And Ferorus doesn't need telling twice. Suddenly he's just as much of a git as everyone else. He'll throw anyone under a bus to get what he wants. Exit Ferorus, he will return, that handsome chap. Salome gets another mini-soliloquy to the audience, and there's a lot of pent-up bile to come out here. Now, she's done for her husband. Now, that was all about love and a little bit of revenge. But now for Mariam.
This will be Constabarus' quick dispatch, which from my mouth would lesser credit find. Yet shall he not decease without a match, for Mariam shall not linger long behind.
When you're in the plotting zone, you might as well go two for two. But how to take down Mariam?
First, jealousy. If that avail not, fear shall be my minister to work her end. A common error moves not Herod's ear, which doth so firmly to his Mariam bend.
She knows her brother well. Jealousy. Oh, he's mad for it. And now, in passing, it's mentioned there'll be a poison plot.
She shall be charged with so horrid crime as Herod's fear shall turn his love to hate. I'll make some swear that she desires to climb and seeks to poison him for his estate.
I mentioned the in-passing point here. It's really not prefigured a lot. Yes, we know they don't like each other, but the active plotting to kill Mariam and the intent for it to happen is quite brief here. This is a slight structural issue I'll come back to. Note to the actor, really overdo the word poison, perhaps? We need the audience to hear this plot point. And then we're back to why. Why kill Mariam? Well, because she's been horrid to Salome from the start.
I scorn that she should live my birth to upbraid, to call me base and hungry Edomite. With patient show her collar I betrayed, and watched the time to be revenged by slight.
So it's been brewing for a while, but enough time wasted on her. Back to business. Helping her brother first, so that then he will help you back.
Now tongue of mine with scandal load her name. Turn hers to fountains, Herod's eyes to flame. Yet first I will begin Ferorus' suit, that he my earnest business may effect. And I of Mariam will keep me mute, till first some other doth her name detect.
But then enter the second exposition monkey of the scene. Yes, unnamed random servant person to Silius, who, you may remember, was holed a few times in the previous scene.
Who's there? Silius, man. How fares your lord, that your aspects do bear the badge of sorrow?
He hath the marks of Constabarus' sword, and for a while desires your sight to borrow.
If Salome wasn't annoyed at Constabarus before, she's mightily teed off now. Never has a husband of Salome been so deaded since the last one. Silas, he isn't dead, though.
My heavy curse the hateful sword pursue. My heavier curse on the more hateful arm that wounded my Silius. But renew your tale again. Hath he no mortal harm?
No sign of danger doth in him appear, nor are his wounds in place of peril seen. He bids you be assured you need not fear. He hopes to make you yet Arabia's queen.
Thank God for that. Tell him everything is coming together nicely.
Commend my heart to be Silius' charge. Tell him my brother's sudden coming now will give my foot no room to walk at large. But I will see him yet ere night, I vow.
And the scene ends. Fab work, even if it's mostly exposition, it still works really well. There's so much stuff to play with and to take in slightly different directions for actors to keep the performance alive if they're performing it for a length of time. It's really quite important to have that. Herod's aliveness has really put the cat amongst the pigeons, and Salome is well ahead of the opposition. If this is a race, Salome is off on a run, while in the next scene,
Mariam hasn't even put her trainers on. So in this second scene, Mariam meets with her own exposition monkey, Sohemus. Now that's a bit unfair. Sohemus gets a name check at the top of the play and later on, but he only really features in this scene. Stop tantalising us, Liz. He's a de facto ruler in Herod's absence. He's sort of the deputy prime minister, just keeping things ticking along. And he stood up for Mariam in the past, but he's on thin ice now with Herod, especially as Mariam is about to discover, Herod is alive.
Sohemus, tell me what the news may be that makes your eyes so full, your cheeks so blue.
I do not know how to call them. Ill for me. 'Tis sure they are. Not so I hope for you. Herod.
Oh, what of Herod?
Herod lives.
How? Lives? What? In some cave or forest hid?
Nay. Back returned with honour. Caesar gives him greater grace than e'er Anthonius did.
Ooh, fuck. It seems that Mariam, in the gap between Acts 1 and 3, has resolved resolutely to hate Herod and never return to loving, or for that matter, tolerating him. She sees that this is a disaster.
Foretell the ruin of my family. Tell me that I shall see our city burned. Tell me I shall a death disgraceful die, but tell me not that Herod is returned.
Don't worry, Sohema says. Herod is so obsessed with you, you can turn him on side again.
Be not impatient, madam, but be mild. His love to you again will soon be bred.
Yeah. Ah, yes, says Mariam. About that, kind of decided never to do that again.
I will not to his love be reconciled. With solemn vows I have forsworn his bed.
But you must break those vows.
I'll rather break the heart of Mariam. Cursed is my fate. But speak no more to me. In vain ye speak to live with him I so profoundly hate.
This is a problem for Sohemus. And this scene, another great scene, can be played in so many different ways. From Sohemus's point of view, she must pretend to love Herod, otherwise they're all dead. And as far as he's concerned, she's just being stubborn by refusing to pretend. But the flip side, which is far more resonant now, is that what he is asking her to do is to love Herod, to sleep with him. Just let him shag you, that's not too difficult, is it? So whilst these two speeches are delivered at each other, there's not really a lot of communication going on. Sohemus is saying, just comply, it's easier for me, and we'll stay alive.
Great queen, you must to me your pardon give. Sohemus cannot know your will obey. If your command should me to silence drive, if were not to obey, but to betray. Reject and slight my speeches, mock my faith, scorn my observance, call my counsel naught. Though you regard not what Sohema saith, yet will I ever freely speak my thought. I fear ere long I shall fair Mariam see in woeful state and by herself undone. Yet for your issue's sake, more temperate be. The heart by affability is won.
Whereas Mariam tries to get across, this is worse than death for me. This is perpetual imprisonment. And the reality of Herod's return brings clarity to her speech in Act 1. All that vacillation, it's gone.
And must I to my prison turn again? Oh, now I see I was an hypocrite. I did this morning for his death complain, and yet do mourn because he lives ere night. When I his death believed, compassion wrought, and was the stickler twixt my heart and him. But now that curtain's drawn from off my thought, hate doth appear again with visage grim, and paint the face of Herod in my heart in horrid colours with detested look. Then fear would come, but scorn doth play her part, and saith that scorn with fear can never brook.
And she knows she could comply. He is easy to control if you submit. But she refuses.
I know I could enchain him with a smile and lead him captive with a gentle word. I scorn my look should ever man beguile or other speech than meaning to afford. Else Salome in vain might spend her wind. In vain might Herod's mother wet her tongue. In vain had they complotted and combined, for I could overthrow them all ere long.
And that's all really powerful human stuff. She then goes a little outside of herself by effectively setting herself up now for martyrdom, which is a slightly different kind of Mariam. And there's a question about where you place the performance that I don't have any answers to. That's very much a discussion between your primary actors and the producer.
Oh, what a shelter is mine innocence, to shield me from the pangs of inward grief, against all mishaps, it is my fair defence, and to my sorrows yields a large relief. To be commandress of the triple earth, and sit in safety from a fall secure. To have all nations celebrate my birth. I would not that my spirit were impure. Let my distressed state unpitied be. Mine innocence is hope enough for me.
And she exits, being a bit self-consciously martyry here. Sohemus is left to think on her decision and wishes again she'd just comply. There are a lot of men wishing women would just do as they're told in this play. Sohemus is, shall we say, the thin end of a wedge, where Herod and Constobarus, to some degree, are at the much, much thicker end. So, whilst in a sense we are supposed to feel with Sohemus here, because he's genuinely quite screwed too, he is also part of the problem.
Oh, poor guiltless queen! Oh, that my wish might place a little temper now about thy heart. Unbridled speech is Mariam's worst disgrace, and will endanger her without desert.
But there is more good to Sohemus than the bad. He does ultimately want both of them to come out of this alive, but he accepts that death is the likely outcome for them both.
And if I die, it shall my soul content. My breath in Mariam's service shall be spent.
So, Act 3 is the pivot. Herod is alive and decisions are made. Salome to deal with her enemies, Mariam to abjure Herod. Guess how well that's going to play out. Next up, it's Act 4 and the arrival of Herod, the super git to outshine all other super gits. Because other gits are available. Which brings us to the chorus. So the act ends with the chorus of Jews, or Constobarus's cheerleaders. As I've said many times now, I'm not a fan, and I've not recorded the chorus properly for the full cast audio adaptation. However, I did do an exploring session with Beyond Shakespeare irregular Alan Scott to try and get at the chorus. So that will play after the plain text recording for Act 2. If you have any thoughts about my brief breakdown of this scene, or if you have any disagreements with my thoughts, or if I'm in plain error, let me know. I might re-edit based on your suggestions. This is definitely one of the more complex plays that we've done. Email us at admin@beyondshakespeare.org or give us a buzz on Twitter @beyondshakes. Or you can support our work by becoming a patron. Patrons get to vote for the plays we work on next. Go to patreon.com/beyondshakespeare and get involved. But that's it from this spoiler episode. The full cast super deluxe edit will be coming anon. But now here's the plain text recording with Pamela Flanagan as Salome, Gillian Horgan as Mariam, Alan Scott as Silius Man, Rob Meissen as Sohemus, Andy Barrett as Ananel, with the chorus exploration, Alan Scott. I've been Ferrorus and your host, Robert Crichton. And here's the plain text recording of Act 3 of The Tragedy of Mariam by Elizabeth Carey.
Urge me no more, Grafina, to forsake, not 12 hours since I married her for love.
And do you think a sister's power can make a resolute decree so soon remove?
Poor minds they are that honour not affects.
Who hunts for honour, happiness neglects.
You might have been both of felicity and honour too in equal measure seized.
It is not you can tell so well as I what 'tis can make me happy or displeased.
To match for neither beauty nor respects, one mean of birth, but yet of meaner mind. A woman full of natural defects. I wonder what your eye in her could find.
Mine eye found loveliness, mine ear found wit, to please the one and to enchant the other. Grace on her eye, mirth on her tongue doth sit. In looks a child, in wisdom's house a mother.
But say you thought her fair, as none thinks else. Knows not Theroras, beauty is a blast. Much like this flower, which today excels, but longer than a day it will not last.
Her wit exceeds her beauty.
Wit may show the way to ill as well as good, you know.
But wisdom is the porter of her head, and bars all wicked words from issuing thence.
But of a porter better were you sped, if she against their entrance made defence.
But wherefore comes the sacred Ananel, that hitherward his hasty steps doth bend? Great sacrificer, ye are arrived well. Ill news from holy mouth I not attend.
My lips, my son, with peaceful tidings blessed, shall utter honey to your listening ear. A word of death comes not from priestly breast. I speak of life. In life there is no fear. And for the news I did the heavens salute, and filled the temple with my thankful voice. For though that morning may not me pollute, at pleasing accidents I may rejoice.
Is Herod then revived from certain death?
What? Can your news restore my brother's breath?
Both so and so the king is safe and sound, and did such grace in royal Caesar meet, that he, with larger style than ever crowned, within this hour Jerusalem will greet. I did but come to tell you, and must back, to make preparatives for sacrifice. I knew his death your hearts, like mine, did rack, though to conceal it proved you wise.
How can my joy sufficiently appear?
A heavier tale did never pierce mine ear.
Now Salome of happiness may boast.
But now Pheroras is in danger most.
I shall enjoy the comfort of my life.
And I shall lose it. Losing of my wife.
Joy, heart, for Constabarus shall be slain.
Grieve, soul, Grafina shall from me be ta'en.
Smile, cheeks, the fair Silius shall be mine.
Weep, eyes, for I must with a child combine.
Well, brother, cease your moans. On one condition I'll undertake to win the king's consent. Grafina still shall be in your tuition, and her with you be ne'er the less content.
What's the condition? Let me quickly know, that I as quickly your command may act. Were it to see what herbs in Ophir grow, or that the lofty Tyrus might be sacked.
'Tis not so hard a task. It is no more, but tell the king that Constabarus hid the sons of Babas, done to death before. And 'tis no more than Constabarus did. And tell him more that we, for Herod's sake, not able to endure our brother's foe, did with a bill our separation make, though loath from Constabarus else to go.
Believe this tale foretold. I'll go from hence in Herod's ear the Hebrew to deface, and I that never studied eloquence do mean with eloquence this tale to grace.
This will be Constabarus' quick dispatch, which from my mouth would lesser credit find. Yet shall he not decease without a match, for Mariam shall not linger long behind. First, jealousy. If that avail not, fear shall be my minister to work her end. A common error moves not Herod's ear, which doth so firmly to his Mariam bend. She shall be charged with so horrid crime, as Herod's fear shall turn his love to hate. I'll make some swear that she desires to climb and seeks to poison him for his estate. I scorn that she should live my birth to upbraid, to call me base and hungry Edomite. With patient show her collar I betrayed, and watch the time to be revenged by slight. Now tongue of mine with scandal load her name. Turn hers to fountains, Herod's eyes to flame. Yet first I will begin Ferora's suit, that he my earnest business may effect. And I of Mariam will keep me mute, till first some other doth her name detect. Who's there? Silius' man. How fares your lord, that your aspects do bear the badge of sorrow?
He hath the marks of Constabarus' sword, and for a while desires your sight to borrow.
My heavy curse the hateful sword pursue, my heavier curse on the more hateful arm that wounded my Silius. But renew your tale again. Hath he no mortal harm?
No sign of danger doth in him appear, nor are his wounds in place of peril seen. He bids you be assured you need not fear. He hopes to make you yet Arabia's queen.
Commend my heart to be Silius' charge. Tell him my brother's sudden coming now will give my foot no room to walk at large. But I will see him yet ere night, I vow.
Sahemus, tell me what the news may be that makes your eyes so full, your cheeks so blue.
I know not now how to call them. Ill for me. 'Tis sure they are. Not so I hope for you. Herod.
Oh, what of Herod?
Herod lives.
How? Lives? What? In some cave or forest hid?
Nay. Back returned with honour. Caesar gives him greater grace than e'er Anthonius did.
Foretell the ruin of my family. Tell me that I shall see our city burned. Tell me I shall a death disgraceful die. But tell me not that Herod is returned.
Be not impatient, madam, but be mild. His love to you again will soon be bred.
I will not to his love be reconciled. With solemn vows I have forsworn his bed.
But you must break those vows.
I'll rather break the heart of Mariam. Cursed is my fate. But speak no more to me. In vain ye speak to live with him I so profoundly hate.
Great queen, you must to me your pardon give. So Hemus cannot now your will obey. If your command should me to silence drive, if were not to obey but to betray. Reject and slight my speeches, mock my faith, scorn my observance, call my counsel naught. Though you regard not what Sohema saith, yet will I ever freely speak my thought. I fear ere long I shall fair Mariam see in woeful state and by herself undone. Yet for your issue's sake, more temperate be. The heart by affability is won.
And must I to my prison turn again? Oh, now I see I was an hypocrite. I did this morning for his death complain, and yet do mourn because he lives ere night. When I his death believed, compassion wrought, and was the stickler twixt my heart and him. But now that curtain's drawn from off my thought, hate doth appear again with visage grim, and paints the face of Herod in my heart, in horrid colours, with detested look. Then fear would come, but scorn doth play her part, and saith that scorn with fear can never brook. I know I could enchain him with a smile, and lead him captive with a gentle word. I scorn my look should ever man beguile, or other speech than meaning to afford. Else Salome in vain might spend her wind, in vain might Herod's mother wet her tongue. In vain had they complotted and combined, for I could overthrow them all ere long. Oh, what a shelter is mine innocence, to shield me from the pangs of inward grief. 'Gainst all mishaps, it is my fair defence, and to my sorrows yields a large relief. To be commandress of the triple earth, and sit in safety from a fall secure. To have all nations celebrate my birth. I would not that my spirit were impure. Let my distressed state unpitied be. Mine innocence is hope enough for me.
Oh, poor guiltless queen! Oh, that my wish might place a little temper now about thy heart. Unbridled speech is Mariam's worst disgrace and will endanger her without desert. I am in greater hazard. All my head the fatal axe doth hang unsteadily. My disobedience, once discovered, will shake it down. So Hemus, so shall die. For when the king shall find we thought his death had been as certain as we see his life, and marks withal I slighted so his breath as to preserve alive his matchless wife. Nay more, to give to Alexander's hand the regal dignity, the sovereign power. How I had yielded up at her command the strength of all the city, David's tower. What more than common death may I expect, since I too well do know his cruelty? 'Twere death a word of Herod's to neglect, what then to do directly contrary? Yet, life, I quit thee with a willing spirit, and think thou couldst not better be employed. I forfeit thee for her that more doth merit, 10 such were better dead than she destroyed. But fare thee well, chaste queen. Well may I see the darkness palpable, the rivers part, the sun stand still, nay, more retorted be, but never woman with so poor a heart. Thine eye's grave majesty keeps all in awe and cuts the wings of every loose desire. Thy brow is table to the modest law. Yet though we dare not love, we may admire. And if I die, it shall my soul content. My breath in Mariam's service shall be spent.
Okay, let's rattle through this one and see if I drift off.
Hold one first.
Yeah.
Okay. 'Tis not enough for one that is a wife to keep her spotless from an act of ill, but from suspicion she should free her life and bear herself of power as well as will. 'Tis not so glorious for her to be free as by her proper self-restrained to be. When she hath spacious ground to walk upon, why on the ridge should she desire to go? It is no glory to forbear alone those things that may her honour overthrow. But 'tis thankworthy if she will not take all lawful liberties for honour's sake. That wife her hand against her fame doth rear, that more than to her lord alone will give a private word to any second ear, and though she may with reputation live, yet most chaste she doth her glory blot, and wounds her honour, though she kills it not. When to their husbands they themselves do bind, do they not wholly give themselves away? Or give they but their body, not their mind, reserving that, though best, for others pray? No, sure, their thoughts no more can be their own, and therefore should to none but one be known. Then she usurps upon another's right, that seeks to be by public language graced, and though her thoughts reflect with purest light, her mind, if not peculiar, is not chaste. For in a wife it is no worse to find a common body than a common mind. And every mind, though free from thought of ill, that out of glory seeks a worth to show, when any's ears but one therewith they fill, doth in a sort her pureness overthrow. Now Mariam had, but that to this she bent, been free from fear as well as innocent.
Oh, there's a lot to unpack in that one. It's all about Mariam.
Yes.
That's relatively clear. It's very gendered from a male perspective of women's rights, certainly in terms of physical rights. It's really quite unpleasant in places.
Given the author, I wonder whether it's almost satirical.
Oh, yeah, no, I think it definitely is. I think that you don't write a chorus talking about a woman's body. You know, male authority figures condemning her effectively. Let's go through it as stanza by stanza. Right. I'll do the same joining in.
Yeah, okay. 'Tis not enough for one that is a wife to keep her spotless from an act of ill, but from suspicion she should free her life and bear herself of power as well as will. 'Tis not so glorious for her to be free as by her proper self restrained to be.
So, right. It's not enough to keep herself spotless from an act of will, but from suspicion.
Yeah, well,
she free her life and bears her. So it's not enough to be a good,
yeah, well,
a good wife. It's not so glorious for her to be free as by her proper self restrained to be. So it's this injunction to be self-restrained, to be dutiful, to appear dutiful, modest. It's almost leery, actually, isn't it, in tone? Or it will get so. This is where the chorus sort of really shows its true colours. This is where the chorus starts paying its way, because it starts really feeling deliberate. Whereas you weren't sure early on what the agenda was, this is starting to feel
This is the preachy bit, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's preachy, but it's also obviously a satire on the preachiness. You know, this is not a chorus you're supposed to be going, yeah, yeah, you're right, absolutely. Or at least you hope not.
Well,
maybe I don't suspect she really was. Or for that matter, that a modern audience would ever think that. I mean, there's that other thing, is that to some degree, I don't care what the original audience thinks. What does our audience think?
I would suspect that you would find a certain degree of agreement with these concepts within the legislature in Alabama.
Oh, I'm sure you
at
would.
At the present time.
Oh, I'm sure you would.
You know.
That's what's depressing about it. Anyway, let's look at stanza two. I think we've got the gist of this one. I think we're keyed into it now.
Yeah. When she hath spacious ground to walk upon, why on the ridge should she desire to go? It is no glory to forbear alone those things that may her honour overthrow. But 'tis thankworthy if she will not take all lawful liberties for honour's sake.
So it's again, you know, you've got all this lovely ground, so you're going to have... Why do you have to go out on a limb? Why do you have to say those things? Why can't you just shut up?
Shut up and conform, yes.
Tis thankworthy if she will not take all lawful liberties.
Again, and I think the scansion and rhyme has...
Yeah, that one doesn't...
supplanted the meaning
that,
a little
that
bit.
That doesn't quite say what it says. Yeah, it's slightly awkward. It sort of looks like it's saying the opposite of what it's actually saying.
Yeah.
But basically, shut up, I think, is the note I've got for that. That stanza. Let's look at stanza three.
That wife her hand against her fame doth rear, that more than to her lord alone will give a private word to any second ear. And though she may with reputation live, yet though most chaste she doth her glory blot, and wounds her honour, though she kills it not.
So though she's chaste, she's saying things. She's listening to, in private, to somebody else. She's listening to Sohemus, and that's bad. She shouldn't in private listen to, just listening to a man talking in private. That's a sort of that's unchaste behaviour. Mm. You know, should only be in the company of women, surrounded by women, except for her husband.
Mm.
You know. Anyway, stanza four.
Yes, we've actually disproved the theory that there's a movement of the lead character up one stanza at a time.
I don't know. She opened it, really, didn't she?
Yes, you know.
This whole thing is about her.
It jumped up.
And it's following on directly from the previous scene. She's talking to a servant who's telling her to do things, and she's voicing an opinion. So this is a direct response to the previous scene.
Right.
Stanza four.
When to their husbands they themselves do bind, do they not wholly give themselves away?
Answers on a postcard.
Or give they but their body, not their mind, reserving that, though best for others pray. No, sure, their thoughts no more can be their own, and therefore should to none but one be known.
God, that's a horrible thought, isn't it? Do they not give themselves wholly to their husbands? Or give they but their body, not their mind? Reserving their mind for others. There are so many really quite unpleasant elements to that. No sure their thoughts no more can be their own, and therefore should to none but one be known. They can't have their own thoughts. Women do not, literally, these characters are saying women cannot have their own opinions.
Hmm.
They only can have their husbands.
You know, so...
Everything, the moment they give their bodies away, they give their minds away to their husbands. And that's just... I'm just going to write horrid. Okay, stanza five. Let's rattle through this relatively quickly because I'm feeling depressed.
Then she usurps upon another's right that seeks to be by public language graced. And though her thoughts reflect with purest light, her mind, if not peculiar, is not chaste. For in a wife it is no worse to find a common body than a common mind.
God. Actually, I'm going to just write next to that. Fuck off. Is my considered response to that. I think we don't need to say more. It's just like the brutal misogyny of these men is just sort of getting worse. It's getting worse. If not peculiar, is not chaste. So having thoughts is an unchaste act.
Yeah. Well, I think peculiar is in the sense of personal.
Mm. Oh yeah. But it's the point that you know.
Yeah.
Thought is unchaste.
Yeah, but peculiar is a word that has. Oh yes. Evolved in meaning.
That has shifted in meaning, but that's not the point. The emphasis was not is on chaste was what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah, I mean it's a slightly odd one, and it's an interesting
peculiar
question.
Peculiar in the sense is talking about being owned. You know,
yes.
It's about ownership.
Yeah.
It's
an interesting question as to whether this is the author trying to satirise other views or.
Oh, I think it is deliberately, pointedly writing in a bigot.
And every mind, though free from thought of ill, that out of glory seeks a worth to show, when any's ears but one therewith they fill, doth in a sort her pureness overthrow. Now Mariam had, but to this she bent, been free from fear as well as innocent.
So she is, these characters are explicitly saying, because she's confided thoughts with somebody else, she is actually guilty and therefore effectively deserves to die. Which is a leap considering the rest of the play. I mean, I'm not very sympathetic to Mariam in many ways, but that as a thought is just really quite unpleasant.